Yankee?
That's what I don't know. I don't know how she knew that.
Good morning, Rabbi Sai. So to continue our discussion, I saw some very interesting svaras brought down in the Oruch HaShulchan, because the Oruch HaShulchan discusses that this question of how many people should light, who should light the balabos only, and he says that the Ramah brings down that the minig has become that everybody over the age of bar mitzvah, they all light their own menorahs. And the kasha, and he brings down, he says, there are some shehirishu, they complained against the Ramah, and they said that seeing as, yeah, whichever way you look at it, whether or not you look at it from Tosef's point of view, or whether you look at it from the Rambam's point of view, the Rambam, for instance, who says that we light a menorah for every person in the house, the Rambam himself says that on the eighth day, 10 people in the house, the Balabais will light 10. And similarly, Tosfos only learnt that the Balabais does all the lighting, but not the individual members of the household. If it's not the individual members of the household, he says, then the Ramos says that today it's become the minig. Today the minig is that all adults light their own menorah. And the question on that, he says, is that some complained, why isn't it the bracha levatola? If the Gemara said, and Tosfos understood, yeah, mitzvah snare shabesoi is the mitzvah. And then there's the mahadrim, mahadrim, and mahadrim. And both Tosis and the Rambam understood, whichever way you look at it, that it's the balabais who's doing all the lighting. Then, how come, yeah, there's not a brocha levatola that we created a minig now that individual people are lighting, and instead of the balabais making one brocha on 10 menorahs, you've got 10 people making 10 brochas, why isn't it a brocha levatola?
The minig should have been that if you want to light, light, but the brocha stays.
The brocha stays in the balabais, yeah? That's
you
one.
Seen that anywhere,
that's right? One. Or that the individual people, if they want to light, they should only be yoita with the brocha, the balabais, not. Yeah,
so
not that
he be should.
That's from one point of view. And then the Oruch HaShulchan turns it upside down. And he says, but it's very strange, this minig, or this halacha of Ne'er Ishu Beisoy. He says, where in any other mitzvah do you find that there's a chova on the balabais? I mean, okay, mezuzah, because that's the house, it's a physical thing, yeah? But generally speaking, where's the chova on the balabais? When Chazal wanted to do Pirsum Inissa for Purim, yeah, they said that everybody has to hear Kriya Samagila. They didn't say that every Balabais has to hear Kriya Samagila, or there should be a Kriya Samagila in every Jewish home.
It's in the house.
She said, what?
This is in the house.
So what? I'm saying, well, he says, so the logical thing is, actually, that everybody should be Mechuyev, in which case everybody should be making their own Brocha, and the complaint about Brocha Levatola doesn't hold any water. So he's looking at it from two different directions. And then he resolves it, tomorrow Blinator, because our speaker's arrived.
You know, in history, when the Chanuk was first set up, it was
Torahway, Northwest London, Thursday, Zayin Mar Cheshvan, Zayin Kislev, 27th of November, Rabbi Shaul Rosenblatt Shlita, Hillel and the Calendar, Part 2. This week's Torah has been sponsored by Nishmas Rabbi Yitzchok Ben Rabbi Yishayahu Zichrono Livracha, whose yotzeit is Tess Kislev, and Leah Nishmas, our founder, our best friend, Rabbi Yosef Dov Ben, Rabbi Shimon Michal Tzvi Yitzkevich, Zichrono Livracha.
Well, good morning, everybody. As was said, this is part two of what I was talking about last time. Just going to go over a little bit of the couple of things that we said last time, just because for context of what we're talking about this time. So talked about the molad last time, and if you recall, I said that the molad is an average lunar month. It's not the actual, what astronomers call the conjunction. The conjunction is when sun, the earth, moon, and sun are all in line. That's conjunction. That's what really, so the essence of what Rosh Chodesh should be, that should be Rosh Chodesh. It's not what we see as Rosh Chodesh. It's not even what we see as the Molad. The Molad is the average time that they would all be in line. It's actually never, conjunction and the Molad never actually coincide. maybe once in a million years, by chance they might. And it can be as much as 9 hours out. So for example, this recent month of Kislev, if you looked at, you listened to in Shul, when they told you the Molad was, that doesn't mean that that moment of the Molad, Earth, Sun and Moon were aligned. They weren't. It was actually 4 hours after that that Earth, Sun and Moon were aligned. Next month, it's only 1 hour difference. But the month after that is going to be 10 hours different. So it's not an exact scientific alignment, the Molad. It's just the average amount of time between when the Earth, the amount of time it takes the moon to go around the Earth. Just a few fun facts while I'm at it, just to give you a sense of what we're talking about with our solar system and with the astrological calculations. Don't know if you guys know this, but do you know that Australia is wider than the moon? That's how small the moon is. The moon is not a large body. It's smaller than Australia. I mean, it's a different shape, so Australia is flat, and the moon is spherical, but if you do the diameter of the moon, it's smaller than Australia is. I'm fascinated. It's still pretty large, but that feels small to me. I don't know. I think the moon is much bigger than that.
It's flat as well.
Pardon? The moon's also flat, of course. Yeah, yeah, and made of cheese.
Exactly.
So, did you also know that interestingly, the sun contains 99.8% of the mass of our solar system. The sun is absolutely massive. And you think of a planet like Jupiter, which is, you could fit 1,300 Earths into Jupiter. Jupiter is a massive, massive planet, and yet it still is only 0.1% of the mass of our solar system. That's because, interestingly, the sun, in the core of the sun, is made of plasma. Now, the sun is gas, but it's gas that's plasma. Don't ask me how that works. Still gas, but it's plasma, and it is 10 times more dense than gold. So if you got this plasma from the middle of the sun and you put it into a milk bottle, let's say, obviously not shy to do, but let's say you had this plasma you put in the milk bottle, it would weigh 150 kilograms, that little milk bottle. You wouldn't be able to pick it up.
The gas weighs more than air.
The gas weighs more than air. It weighs more than gold. It weighs 10 times more than gold. It's in the flash of the when you start to think about these things. It's like, how does that work? How's that possible? How could that be? But, you know, Hashem has his ways. And
it's the flash of the that you know these things.
Yeah.
How do we know? Nobody's ever seen
us. Nobody's ever said. Yeah, 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 yeah. That's it.
Plasma from the sun.
Yeah, yeah, that, exactly, exactly.
How do we know these things?
Yeah, it's a good question. I don't know. Scientific measurements and judgments and you know, you see how the sun works and how it affects the earth and how its rays kind of come out, and you get a sense. But it's also, I think, they know the sun's gravitational pull. You can measure the sun's gravitational pull. I don't think that's so hard to measure the sun's gravitational pull, as such as it impacts the moon, it impacts the earth, it impacts everything around it, which would tell you its mass. Now, once you know its mass, you're going to have to say, well, how can it have such a big mass if it's gas? So you'd have to kind of scientifically work out how that all works. But you're right, you're right. And by the way, just to add one final thing, our sun is estimated to be 1/1,000,000,000th of the mass of the Milky Way. So the entire Milky Way, which is our galaxy, and all the different stars around it, the sun that weighs 1 trillion times more than the sun, which weighs 99.9% of our galaxy, which is, and it's 1,000 times bigger than Jupiter, when Jupiter is 1,300 Earths. It gives you a sense of the scale of our universe. It is just absolute, and that's in the Milky Way. That's only one galaxy, by the way. Many more galaxies in the universe. So it's what Hashem has created for us human beings, and it's the purpose of the entire universe is for us human beings. That's all he made it for. Is just absolutely unimaginable and incredible and amazing and wondrous. And I think it makes feel a sense of awe for Hashem and his power and his ability and what he is. But the question is, we are very out of sync with the science of the new moon. We were our Molad that does not match up with when the new moon actually appears. So, and it seems like almost like it's set that way. It seems almost like we don't care. And I want to just kind of give a little thought behind that, a little bit of a philosophical thought by that, not a technical thought behind it. And that is, we say, Asher Tikoy Sam Moedam, these are the months which you will call them in their times. And I said this last time, the din of Rosh Chodesh is such that the new moon, or the new moon is considered to be the month starts when Klal Yisrael decides it starts. No other time. It doesn't start when it scientifically starts. It starts when Klal Yisrael decided it starts. And I'm going to come to this, a very significant aspect of this in a moment. Why would God set it up that way? Why not work out the science, see when the new month starts, know when it is, and then decide the month starts then, start it in its proper time? Why make it that we actually never have a new month starts at its supposed proper time? And I think it's because of the message inherent within that, is that we Jews have to make time meaningful. Time on its own, this world on its own, left to its own devices, is not meaningful. If we were just to kind of sit back and not do anything and let the world run, and the lions run around in Africa, and the fish swim in the sea, and the sun would rise and set every day, and the world would go. But it would not be a meaningful world. It would not be a world without any purpose. It would not be a world with purpose. The only purpose in this world is the Jewish people and the purpose that we make in this world. And I think that message is very strongly there in the idea of Rosh Chodesh, is that we create time. Time is not something that happens on its own. We Jews have to add meaning to time. We Jews have to add holiness to time. And if we don't add that holiness to time, it's not there. And the whole thing is a waste of time. And there's no point in this universe. And I think that message comes through very strongly from the fact that we are the ones that make Rosh Chodesh. And Rosh Chodesh doesn't just happen. There's no Rosh Chodesh. If Klal Yisrael did not Mekadesh the Chodesh, there would be no Rosh Chodesh. Now you'll tell me, wait a minute, the moon went around the earth, so there is a Rosh Chodesh. No, Rosh Chodesh does not exist. Rosh Chodesh and the months are only there because Klal Yisrael makes them and creates them. The Rambam says, by the way, interestingly, Sefer HaMitzvahs, he says, if it were ever the case, and he says it's not because we have Rav Tocha and it's not going to happen, but he says, if there was ever a case, a time, a month, whereby there were no Jews in Eretz Yisrael, no Jews lived in Eretz Yisrael, there would be no Kiddush HaKiddush, there would be no new month, there would be no festivals, you wouldn't be able to do it. It's not Shaykh. You can't just make a month, you can't just make a calendar. It has to be us being Mekadosh, and it has to happen from Eretz Yisrael, according to the Rambam at least. That was just kind of completing what I finished last time. I just wanted to now say a little bit more about what I was saying last time. And that is, I mentioned last time that, as we all know, the idea of Hillel the Second, they call him, Hillel Hanossi, who lived in the 300s, who lived near the end of the period of the Gemara, near the end of the period of the Amoraim, set our calendar for us. Amoraim. Yeah, 300, yeah. We talk about the Hillel and Shammai, was a Tanna. No, 358 CE was Amoraim. You would see anyway, if you look at the Gemara, you see the earlier Amoraims, certainly there was still a concept of Kiddush HaChodesh until the 300s at least. So it couldn't have been the set of calendar until much later on, near the end of the period of the Gemara. And the Gemara doesn't talk about it. The Gemara doesn't talk about a fixed calendar. There's one place where maybe it does, which I'm going to actually come to today. But in general, the Gemara does not talk about this fixed calendar. And as we know, and as I said last time, the Gemara does not talk about this Hillel guy. He does not appear in our Talmud. Not the Bavli and not the Yerushalmi. The first time that Hillel is mentioned, this Hillel who we know is setting the calendar, was in the Sefer Ibor, which was written in Barcelona in the early 1100s by a rabbi called Rav Avram ben Chia. It's a very accepted sefer about the Ibla Chodesh. And it was accepted. The Ramban accepted it. The Sefer Chinuch accepted it. Accepted that this was the what happened. Hillel fixed the calendar. But there's a massive gap between this 358 and the 1100s of 800 years. Well, there's no mention of Hillel whatsoever. Hillel just appears out of the blue. in the Sefer Ibor. But as I said, generally the Rishonim accepted it. Now, the Rambam does not seem to accept this idea of Hillel. So you'll see amongst Achrayim that there's a disagreement here. The Chasam Sofer says that the Rambam didn't accept the concept of Hillel. So even though we've got in our heads, of course, that's what it is. Hillel made the calendar, we all know that. Well, the Rambam didn't know that. He didn't think that Hillel made the calendar. He saw it quite differently. There were those that say the Rambam did agree with it, but the general, my sense is the general overall picture is that Hillel didn't, as the Rambam didn't agree with that. And, as I mentioned last time, I'm just going to say a little bit more about this right now. The Cairo Geniza, which, by the way, I just saw an article yesterday that they're starting to organise and bring out a lot more of it. It's going to be fascinating to see what comes out and what more is available to us as a result of them doing that. But the Cairo Geniza is the example where the Cairo Geniza has been so helpful for us and so insightful for us. There's letters about a dispute between a Rav Meir ben, the Aaron ben Meir, and the Rosh Galusa in Bavel. Rav Aaron ben Meir was the head of the yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, and Rosh Galusa, who was supported by Rav Sadia Gaon at the time, as to the date of Rosh Hashanah in the year 922, and they had 2 days different. The Rosh Galusa, Rav Aaron ben Meir said Rosh Hashanah was going to be on a Sunday, and in Bavel, they said it was going to be on Tuesday, and they kept different dates. They kept different dates in that year. And now, it only happened for 1 year because they resolved the dispute during the course of that year. But for 1 year, now, if you had Hillel's calendar, and it was all set up, and it was all organized, and everyone was doing it, and everyone knew it, and it had spread out amongst Klal Yisrael and the way we could have in our minds it happened, then that's impossible. Possible for that to occur. And even what we call the Dechiyos, you know, Lo Adu Rosh, the famous Lo Adu Rosh, which I mentioned last time, that Rosh Hashanah can't be on a Sunday, Wednesday, or Friday. I just mentioned to you that in that year, the Rav Avin Hillel held that Rosh Hashanah was on a Sunday because he didn't agree with those Dechiyos even. He didn't agree with those ideas of those four Dechiyos that is so rooted in the belief of what Hillel kind of brought to us and what Hillel taught. He hadn't accepted those, and he was a serious Talmid Chacham. He wasn't some guy, you know, one of the Tzedukim or one of the Karayim. He was a proper Rav. So it's not so simple in my mind that just Hillel created this calendar and it was a mispashit in all of Klal Yisrael immediately. And now it's what we go by. And now it's what we accept. But I think it took time to get out there. But what I want to talk a little bit about today, because it's interesting how it comes out from this. And how it works, and I think people don't necessarily always understand how it works, is the idea of the second day of Yom Tov. How that plays out based on our calendar. And so, you can understand how, if you recall I told you, that it would take between 4 and 5 weeks for messengers to get to Bavel at the time of the Gemara, or any time, all the way until more recent times. 4 and 5 weeks, and therefore there's no way you'll be able to know when the Chagim were if you were living in Sura or in Pampadisa. Absolutely impossible if you know the date of the Chag before the Chag arrived. Therefore, you'd have to keep 2 days misafik. Now, that's a very different setup to what we have today. 2 days misafik means it's a safik deraisa. Standard, simple, black and white, common and garden, safik deraisa. You don't know which day is Yom Tov. You have to keep them both. Now, my sense is, although I can't give you chapter and verse for this, but my sense is that they had one day that was the fundamental day where they kept the Yom Tov, and they did the Tfilos, and they looked at it as a Yom Tov. And the second day was just the day where they didn't do Malacha. You know, sometimes people get upset like that. If they go to Eretz Yisrael or live in Eretz Yisrael for a while, they'll get a psak, they call it, I don't know, they used to call it my day, 1.5 days. Doesn't mean very much to me, 1.5 days, but it was like that psak. Because it was a Suffolk there, you kept the first day as Yom Tov, like everyone else in Eretz Yisrael. On the second day, you didn't keep Yom Tov because you weren't exactly a Ben Chutz La'aretz, because you were a yeshiva there, and you were there a few years. But you weren't exactly a Ben Eretz Yisrael, so you can't do Malacha, because just in case, as a Suffolk, you know, you keep the second day Yom Tov as well. But you don't do but you daven like the Bnei Eretz Yisrael. That to me is a sense of what what they did in those days. It was Sofik Deraisa. There's no reason for them to daven a Yom Kippur davening, or let's say a Sukkot davening on those days, because it's Sofik either way. Why would you? The Sofik Deraisa, I can't do Malacha, because maybe I'll be doing Malacha on the day of Yom Tov. But if it's a Sofik, it could be Chol, it could be Yom Tov, then why would I choose Chol davening over Yom Tov davening, or Yom Tov davening over Chol davening? There's no Chumrah over here. It's the Chumrah could be either way. Pardon?
Tefillin.
Yeah, I would imagine they put on Tefillin, yeah. I would guess they put on Tefillin on the second day. So, it's like I say, at that time when it was a Sofik Deraisa, when it was purely just a practical thing, then they did what you would do in any normal Sofik Deraisa. And by the way, you see in general, there was no such thing as 2 days Yom Kippur. Now, why were there no such thing as 2 days Yom Kippur if it's a Sofik Deraisa? Surely you should fast 2 days. If it's a Sofik Deraisa, Sofik Deraisa. How does that work? Anyone have any idea why there weren't 2 days Yom Kippur?
Because you can't.
You can't, okay. So that's probably the fundamental part of the answer. It's probably considered maybe Pekuch Nefesh, to fast for 2 days. But you do see in the Gemara, very clearly, a couple of cases where you see the Amorayim fasted 2 days, kept 2 days Yom Kippur. So, pardon?
Chumrah
al Tzibur. No, you wouldn't call it a Chumrah al Tzibur. That's when Chazal make a Takana. Chazal don't make a Takana of a Chumrah al Tzibur. When you've got a Sofik Deraisa, that's Matzias. That's not Chazal putting a Chumrah al Tzibur. Pardon? Yeah, but you can't be Makel in a Sofik Deraisa. You've got to do what the Torah tells you to do. Other than Pekuach Nefesh, the only way we would ever be Makel in a Sofik Deraisa is a Pekuach Nefesh. You're only heter. I can't think of another heter to be makel on the deraisa other than pikuach nefesh. So maybe pikuach nefesh. But I'll tell you, there is another aspect to this as well, and that I haven't seen this anywhere. But the Gemara says this, so to me it must be part of it. The Gemara says that from the time of Ezra, they never made Elul muba. Elul was always 29 days. Now it's more in Rosh Hashanah. So, how's that work? Surely if you've got witnesses coming, and the witnesses come and tell you that Elul's this day, or the witnesses don't come, then how can you, how could Chazal at that time sort of fix it like that? How could they do it that Elul was never going to be Muba? Surely it's tally on the witnesses, not tally on their choices. So in my mind, my sense of it is, and the Mefarshim say this, that Chazal had a lot of leeway. And it says, Atem afilu shogigim. Atem afilu mezidim. You can be mezid. The based in the Sanhedrin has the ability, has the prerogative, to make a Rosh Chodesh on a particular day, even though no witnesses came. The witnesses didn't come, and they said, we're going to make Rosh Chodesh this day nevertheless.
They had to do that.
They had to do that. Why did they have
because
to do it?
You couldn't get the information around.
So to me, the reason they did that is because now you had a chazaka. Yes, you couldn't guarantee because the shluchim hadn't come. And so you didn't absolutely know. But because you had a chazaka, the Beis Din in Yerushalayim are almost certainly going to make Rosh Chodesh on this day. It's not dependent on witnesses anymore. It's dependent on the Das Beis Din. So then, it wasn't really such a suffix. You had a chazaka that it was going to be on this day, and you keep the first day and just kind of not do malacha on the second day. And Yom Kippur wasn't any more suffix deraisa in that same way. It was a suffix b'makom chazaka, which is a much lesser suffix, and it's a suffix we can be a lot more makel on. That's my sense of it. And by the way, also for Nisan, the Gemara says, doesn't say as strongly as Elul, but it says they never really made Adar into a month with 30 days. They also did the same, and obviously for obvious reasons, because Adar, you've got Pesach, and Shavuos follows Pesach, so you're never going to have a problem with Shavuos. And Elul is Rosh Hashanah and all the Chagim. So you've got all the Chagim covered if you don't make those months into 30-day months, which is kind of what they did. let's just talk now about how this plays out today. So first the Gemara says that Rosh Hashanah is an old takana. Rosh Hashanah is a takana from potentially prior to the Mishnah. Chazal made a takana that we should keep 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. Pardon?
Because of the Elul.
Yeah, because of the doubts. L'chayra, because of that. L'chayra. The Gemara doesn't really say why, but the Poshtus is that's why, because it's the first day of the month, and therefore you couldn't get the message out to anywhere as to what day Chazal made the month, what day the Sanhedrin made the month. And therefore they made a takana just early on in Jewish history, to just make it 2 days to simplify it for everybody.
When?
Doesn't say when, but it says I can't remember the lashon of the Gemara, but the Gemara says it. I don't know. Doesn't say. And there's a difference of opinion as to when exactly. Is it prior to the Mishnah? Is it more Gemara times?
Isn't the opposite true? That once they've decided that they're always going to make Elul 29 days.
Yeah.
Then day 30 is always going to be Rosh Hashanah.
Yes, I agree with you, 100%.
So why have two
days? But my sense is they didn't want to set up like that. They didn't want to rely on that chazaka. They even though they made a chazaka to make it easier for Klal Yisrael and maybe to be helpful for Yom Kippur, I think they wanted to retain the idea that no, there is a concept. Atem afilim mezidin. It's a strong lashon mezidin. You're mezid. It's kind of almost eish la shem afu seirasi. They didn't want to do that as a matter of course. They didn't want to just fix that in Jewish law that every single every single elul, we are going to make it 29 days, even if the witnesses don't come. You can't fix that in law. Something that goes against halacha. You can't do that. So they didn't want to fix that in the setup of Jewish life. So there was always the consideration that maybe they would make it on the 30th day. L'chayre, if Aiden didn't come, they would still be masakin. It's the only way to do it. The only way you can make it, from the time of Ezra, hundreds of years, until the time of the Gemara, that Elul is never Mubar, witnesses came every year, witnesses came for hundreds of years, it was never a cloudy day, and the witnesses never didn't see it, it's not possible. So the only way you can do it is if at times you will make it nevertheless, even if the witnesses don't come. Once you made takana's a takana, now it's a full day, and we're going to talk about this now with our second day Yontif. So absolutely, they would have treated the same day of Rosh Hashanah just like the first day of Rosh Hashanah, like we do today. Okay, now, when it comes to the other Chagim, it's a little bit different. And the Gemara says, famous phrase, in Beitza, Shalchum Itam, they sent from there, Hishiru Minhag Aviseichem B'Yedeichem, keep the Minhag Aviseichem B'Yedeichem. And the question is, what does that mean and when was that? So I'm going to give you the standard pshat amongst the Rishonim, is that takana was made after Hillel made the calendar, after 358. So that is the date of that takana, which makes it really interesting, because people will say to you, you might hear people say, why do we need 2 days Yontif now? We have a calendar. To that I would say, Adarabba, those 2 days Yontif were only made once we had a calendar. Those 2 days Yontif are a result of us having a calendar. They were created when we had the calendar. They came post the calendar. Because now you find again in the Rishonim different Rishonis. There's the Rishonim that will say it's a minhag, and there's the Rishonim that will say a takana. And the Rambam says minhag and takana. I think if you look up in Kiddush HaChodesh, you'll see the Rambam puts the two together. He says they made a takana to Shehizhiru bin Agavi Seichem Yidechem, that they should keep the minhag of the ancestors. So it's in my mind, it's a takanas chazal. Second day Yontef is a takanas chazal, like any other takanas chazal. Muksa, not swimming on Shabbos, whatever takana they made, lighting candles on Shabbos, Chanukah, it's takana like anything else. The black and white, the Rabbanan, like anything else is the Rabbanan. However, the Lashon they used was a Lashon of the Takana was to keep the original Minhag. That was the Takana. Keep the Minhag as it was. I've run out of time here a little bit, so I'm just going to say something quickly because it's an interesting application of this. And that is, if you talk about us from Chutzlatz going to Eretz Yisrael for Yom Tov, keeping 1 day or 2 days, people probably know there's a Chacham Tzvi that says you can keep 1 day if you go to Eretz Yisrael. I've learned that Chacham Tzvi 10 times, and not at Magiad Seif Dasa. That might just be me. I can't, don't know what he's talking about, or what's flying in that Chacham Tzvi. If someone can explain it to me, would love to understand it. But against that, you have the Avka Sreichel. It's not talked about in Shulchan Aruch, but against that, you have the Avka Sreichel. And Avka Sreichel is very strong. The Avka Sreichel is the Chuvus of the Beis Yosef. So it has obviously a lot of credibility. And the Beis Yosef says, and he lived in Tzfas at the time, he says that he doesn't really give an explanation as to why people from Chutzlatz should keep 2 days, but he says they should. But his main argument is, he says, I've lived in Tzfas for how long I have lived, and I have seen people coming from Chutzlatz, and they've always kept 2 days of Yom Tov, and there have been many Gedolim in Tzfas who've seen this minhag, and who have not commented on it, and who've not spoken out against it. And the fact that we see it means that it must be the halacha. He doesn't have a strong argument for the halacha, but he goes by what he saw. And it's kind of hard to argue with that. It's kind of, you know, first it's the Beis Yosef. And secondly, you had Gedolim in Tzfas. You had many Gedolim in Tzfas who he's talking about, who saw this and accepted it and said, no, this is the halacha. However, I just want to add one final opinion. And this is a Ksav Yad Tshuva of the Maharit, who lived in Tzfas around the same time, actually. And I think it's a fascinating concept. And I think it's a very, very strong argument against the Beis Yosef, in my mind. And I'll just kind of leave you with the thought. And that is, he says, that if you look at that takana, what is that takana? What takana did Chazal make? Hishilu minhag aviseichem bideichem. They said, the takana, the nature of that takana is to keep the minhag, the original minhag. Now, he asked the question, if the takana is to keep the original minhag, to do what they were doing when it was a sofik, to do as they did when it was a sofik. So he asks, let's say at the time of sofik, somebody from Bavel came to Eretz Yisrael for Yom Tov. How many days Yom Tov would he keep?
One.
Why would he keep one?
Because
there's no sofik. He's in Eretz Yisrael now. He knows what it is. He knows when it's only a sofik. There's no takana. There's no compelling reason to keep 2 days Yom Tov other than the fact that you don't know what day it is. But if you do know what day it is, why would you keep 2 days? But Chazal had not made that takana yet. I'm saying Chazal made that takana after the calendar. So at the time when there was no takana and the whole reason to do it was misafik, if a guy came from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael, he would keep 1 day. It's ridiculous to keep 1 day, 2 days. I'm keeping 2 days out of doubt, but now I know, I'm here, I'm in Yerushalayim, and everyone's keeping 1 day, I know when it is. So the Maharit's Tainas, therefore, if the nature of that takana is to keep the minhag aviseichem biyadeichem, then the takana should have within it the idea that if you come from Chutzlatz to Eretz Yisrael, you should only keep 1 day. The Chazal never made a takana, he suggests, to keep 2 days if you are someone coming from Chutzlatz to Eretz Yisrael. Now, I'm not obviously not saying that halakha l'maisa, and we have the Beis Yosef, and he is our Pesach, but it's very, very interesting argument, a very compelling argument in my mind as to why somebody from Chutzlatz should keep 1 day in Eretz Yisrael, Bizman Hazeh. I'll leave you with that thought.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Fascinating.
I always like
Rabbi Furman's son. Yes.
If young people are about to get married, how many days should we keep?
Yes.